Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running, nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
Welcome, everybody, to the Alan Nathan All-Stars, home of militant moderation, where we cherish and live by our dear friend Alan's noble creed every day. We want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Please be sure to visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Have you noticed over the last day or so that the tenor of the coverage of this Caribbean strike controversy has begun to shift? Still in the front pages, barely, but it's not an all-consuming top-shelf headline like it used to be, and the media frenzy is beginning to die down around this story, and there is a very good reason for that. The reason is that the Democrats got the oversight hearings of this Caribbean strike, this double-tap strike, when you know Pete Hegseth, that lunatic, Jack D. Ripper from Dr. Strangelove, Pete Hegseth, why he just grabbed a microphone and he screamed, kill them all, kill them all. And then they blew up a whole bunch of innocent, hardworking fishermen who just happened to have containers full of drugs on their boat with them when it got blown up by U.S. forces. They were trying to build this storyline that Hegseth and by extension Donald Trump are homicidal lunatics who committed war crimes by brutally gunning down innocents. This was supposed to evoke in your mind, if you're old enough, memories of Vietnam when they would shoot down villagers from helicopters and whatnot. And this is supposed to be like that and show you that these guys are off the chain lunatics. And the Democrats and their media really thought they had something here. And, you know, you have to look at this and remember, there is no difference between the Democratic Party and the mainstream media. CNN, ABC, NBC, they are organs of the Democrat Party, first and foremost. They're not journalists in any meaningful sense. They got their marching orders and they were told to run hog wild with this story and hit the White House from every possible angle and build this idea that Trump and Hegseth are war criminals who should probably be in jail for murdering these innocent fishermen who just happened to have deadly drugs in their possession when the U.S. military blew up their boat. And it was going, I thought, for the Democrats' perspective, it seemed like it was going okay. Going into the weekend, they were getting the controversy they wanted during the Thanksgiving holiday. They got the media coverage. They managed to get the White House out there making what they thought were contradictory statements that could be assaulted. And they folded all of this in to the seditious six, this Democrat idea that the party has hatched, that they're going to encourage the military to commit acts of sedition by questioning Trump's orders, because the Democratic Party, the all-powerful, always-in-control party that runs America, no matter whether they lose elections or not, has decided that Donald Trump isn't a legitimate president, and you can question his orders if you feel like it, because his orders are probably illegal, and here comes the Caribbean double-tap strike. Perfect example of what the seditious six were talking about, very heavily implying throughout the weekend that everybody involved in this attack on this drug boat and all the attacks on all the drug boats are committing war crimes, and they should have known better, and they should have not obeyed their orders when they were told to take action, especially the double tap, this brutal, pointless murder of these innocent seamen that were just floating in the water. Why? That's never been done before in the history of warfare. It's an outrage, they said. So they're building up this narrative. This is really working for the story that they wanted to tell. And then it all came crashing down 24 hours ago because the guy who actually gave the order to hit the drug boat the second time, the guy who ordered the second attack on the drug boat, got a chance to testify. His name is Admiral Frank Bradley, and he is the Navy SEAL commander, a special operations guy who was in charge of this operation and had operational control. And he's the one who ordered the second strike on the boat that's supposedly a war crime. And when he got to testify to Congress, he said, well, of course we struck it a second time. These guys weren't floating in the water screaming for help. They were hauling their drugs back onto the boat and trying to get the boat working again. It wasn't destroyed. It was damaged, but wasn't destroyed. And these guys were trying to reactivate the vehicle, and it's perfectly legal under every formulated law of war that's ever been written for us to attack a second time and neutralize any possible threat. And he gives this very cogent, sober testimony, and suddenly the Democrat media coverage begins to shift. Why, you know, now it's not Pete Hegseth, the maniac, who was ordering these people to be murdered in cold blood. Now, they said, the new storyline is that Hegseth and Trump are a bunch of wimps and losers and cowards, and they let a real man like Frank Bradley go out and do their fighting for them. But they're just a bunch of wimpy jerks who won't take responsibility. In a way, in the course of 24 hours, the Democrat propaganda spin on this story has changed to Pete Hegseth should have been sitting there in the room with a microphone gripped in his white-knuckled fist, and he should have been screaming, kill them all, because if he was a real leader, he would have been the one calling the shots. Which, I mean, goes to show you, I constantly look at this story in all these different angles, and one of the angles is nobody should ever let a Democrat anywhere near the White House for the rest of history, because these guys have no idea how military operations work, even if they were in the military. Their loyalty to their party's ideology is such that they forget everything they ever knew, or they're willing to pretend they forget whatever they knew. And these former military men who are now Democrats just become props for their party's propaganda. And people that should know better, you know, like these Democrats that made the Seditious Six video, these guys know better. They were in the military. They know what they're saying is stupid, but they do it anyway because the party demands it. And it goes to show you, you know, you cannot put Democrats in charge of a military operation. If you do, the Democrat idea is going to be that our guys should just sit there and I guess wait until the dudes in the boat pop up with a rocket launcher. And then they say, oh, golly, they fired a rocket at us. I guess we better shoot again. I think that's what they're driving at with this nonsense. But they've lost control of the narrative, is the bottom line. Democrats and the media have completely lost control of this narrative. They don't know how to deal with Bradley coming out and telling the real story. And now they've got a bunch of loose cannons on deck just rolling around at the Democrat command, trying to freelance it to come up with whatever they can. And probably the biggest one is Mark Warner, a Democrat of Virginia. He's been there forever. He's like 70 years old. He's one of their loudmouths. And he's the one that's running around saying that Trump and Hegseth are a bunch of wimps because they let Frank Kelly be in charge of this operation instead of personally commanding it or whatever. And it's silly, but this is a frantic scramble on their part to salvage what they had built as a political storyline. And it's coming apart at the seams. And I think one of the other big reasons, the one that you're not seeing reported in the media, besides Admiral Bradley coming out and saying what's what, another big thing that's going on here is that there's got to be some polling. They poll everything obsessively. They all do. Republicans, Democrats, you name it. Everybody's got pollsters. So they've got to be polling this thing obsessively to see how it's going. And those polls probably did not look great over the Thanksgiving weekend. Because, you know, it's really hard to read what the Democrats are saying and not come away with the impression that they're in favor of the narco-terrorists. They're basically allied with the narco-terrorists, and they're saying it's an outrage that our guys on those boats with all those loads of drugs got blown up. That is not playing well with the American public. Now, the American people probably do have some reservations about using military force like this. It hadn't been done this way before, quite like this, where we're blowing up the boats before they even get to the United States. So they're skeptical, and it's perfectly reasonable that they would be. This is a novel exercise of force that's being attempted here. And you could criticize the White House and Pete Hegseth and everybody else involved for not doing as great a job as they could have of explaining this and presenting it to the American people in an organized way. But they are starting to rally after this political hit. And they are starting to make their case pretty well, pretty aggressively. And one of the things that they're saying is that we have to intercept these drug shipments at sea like this, and maybe even on land. President Trump has hinted that there could be some kind of ground operation coming to take out the cartel operations before they can launch their drug boats. Because once those boats get to America, the world the Democratic Party has built, it's impossible to stop those drugs from killing Americans once they get here. We can't interdict them. We can't catch them. We can't find them. If they're across the border illegally, they get paid benefits. They disappear. Joe Biden, the Democratic Party, during this border invasion that they staged, they flooded the streets of American City with cartel muscle, with people that work for drug cartels that just strolled across the border and are now getting taxpayer-funded benefits, as we're learning just how deep this rot goes. So once the drugs get into the cities that the Democratic Party has built, then that's it. You're dead. There's nothing else we can do to stop them, you know, except pinch the odd shipment here and there when somebody gets careless. But if we blow the boats up before they get here, well, then we're protected. And they're starting to make, I think, a pretty good logical case that that's the reason they're doing this and that it's the reason why they have to do this. It's the only thing that's going to make a difference. Now, the proof is going to be in the pudding. And voters do quite often look at whether something succeeded or not when they form their opinion on it. And it's too early to tell. Is the supply of drugs really going to be choked off by this tactic? Will drug deaths go down quite a lot over the next year before the midterm elections? If they do, I warrant that the Democrats may begin to regret trying to turn this into a political hit that made them look like the allies of drug lords. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with the Alan Nathan All-Stars.
Tis the season to shop at Ollie's, America's fastest growing retailer of closeout merchandise and excess inventory, with brand name merchandise at up to 70% off the fancy store prices every day. Here's lifestyle expert Kia Malone.
You got to check out Ollie's this holiday season. Holiday decorations like ornaments, wreaths, stockings, and wrapping paper 100 square feet are priced $279, their price $429. Also, lots of brand name toys like Barbie, Nerf, Hasbro, Mattel, LOL Surprise, and more. Up to 70% off the fancy store price. Hot Wheels, Spiral Speed, Crash Set are priced $29.99. Their price $49.99. You'll also find Melissa and Doug up to 60% off the fancy stores. Books for readers of all ages up to 80% off the fancy store price. Other gifts like IntelliCook 6-quart stainless steel slow cooker are priced $19.99. Their price $39.99.
For an Ollie's near you, go to ollies.com. Butterball, the best known and most loved brand of turkey in the U.S., has partnered with renowned Chef Corps brand Headley and Bennett to create the first ever Thanksgiving hosting pants. Butterball turkey talk line expert Corey Gustavik shares more.
Roasting whole turkey isn't something most of us do every day. It can be intimidating and stressful, but the right clothes can make you feel more confident and comfortable in the kitchen. That's why Butterball created the first of their kind Thanksgiving hosting pants. Designed with a fun turkey print in Butterball blue, these pants are sure to give you swagger in the kitchen while keeping all your cooking essentials within arm's reach. With custom pockets for your meat thermometer and phone, loops for your utensils and towels, and a bottle opener to keep the party hydrated, these pants will help you get a leg up in your hosting duties this year. Butterball is giving away for free one final time while supplies last at noon Eastern this Monday, November 17th.
Learn more and claim your pair of hosting pants at ThanksgivingHostingPants.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give me a little talking to, man to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org, a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
back to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. I mentioned Senator Mark Kelly earlier as one of the bigger Democrat loose cannons right now as they're trying to salvage this double-tap strike narrative. And he was giving an interview yesterday in which he said the military might be the best hope to save us from this president. And then he went on to clarify that and muddy the waters. But I mean, that sentence in and of itself is the guy calling for a coup, straight up calling for a coup. And then he said, oh, that's not what I really mean, blah, 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 blah. But that is what he was strongly implying. And that tells me that this seditious crap from the Democrats is really getting out of hand. Joining us to talk about it is Eric Lionheart, president and founder of the First There Foundation, a two-time Bronze Star, One with Valor recipient, and an elite Air Force combat controller. Welcome to the Alan Nathan All-Stars.
Hi, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my jaw kind of dropped a little bit when I saw Mark Kelly just go there and talk about the military saving America from President Trump. And then he tried to qualify it and say, oh, it's not what I'm not calling for a coup. But yeah, he kind of was. And the seditious six have been strongly implying that that's what they expect the military to do, start disobeying President Trump's orders because he's not the legitimate president in their opinion.
Yeah, you're exactly right. When I heard and saw the video, especially being a veteran and doing what I did in the military, it just blew my mind that you have leaders in Congress asking service members to go against the commander in chief. The oath of enlistment, when you take that oath, it says you will obey the president of the United States. So you have these leaders or so-called leaders asking people to revolt against that. It's treasonous, in my opinion.
Now, the defense you hear from the Seditious Six and the others involved in this is that, oh, no, we're just reminding everybody of what the rules are. Why, how can you be angry at us for just reminding everybody that you don't have to obey illegal orders, Nuremberg, and all that sort of thing? And as people who are military veterans and military lawyers pointed out, that's not true. What the implication they're making is that soldiers are supposed to sit there every minute of every day and ask themselves, gosh, is this order legal? Maybe I should disobey it. But that's not at all what the rules about disobeying illegal orders mean.
That's right. And the way they're going about it is cowardly, right? And now that people are speaking up against it, they're kind of backpedaling to it and saying, oh, that's not exactly what we meant. And it's exactly what they meant. And the sad part is that if some of these young service members obey that or they take what they're saying and they follow through with it, those seditious six are going to get punished. It's going to be those service members for disobeying lawful orders. They're going to get punished.
That's the big warning here, yeah, that they could be setting somebody up to take a fall. And when somebody does that, that poor Trump is going to find out real quick that they don't have his back and they're not going to help him and they're not going to save you. The other thing that's been mentioned is that when they did this video that they did, they could not give an example of an illegal order that they were talking about, which really detonates their storyline that they're just reminding everybody of what the rules are. Then came the Caribbean strike, the double strike, and everybody started thinking that was what they were building up to. They were going to use that story to try to make the case that Trump was giving illegal homicidal maniac orders. And now that story is falling apart.
That's right. And any time that we're doing a strike or going kinetic, even when I was doing that in Afghanistan, when you're going kinetic against an enemy, you are going to take out everything in sight. And you do set parameters prior to those strikes. So you know your left-right limits or the ability that you have to move around and maneuver within that operation. So for them to say that, and then I just don't understand how Democrats care more about the smugglers' profit and the poison that's being spread here in the United States and the families and the drugs that are coming to our country that is destroying families and taking out Americans.
In the era of modern warfare, it is very plausible for one or two people to come up with a weapon that can take down an aircraft. I mean, that is not an uncommon scenario at all. And we're talking about drug cartels that are notoriously well-armed, many of them with military hardware they've gotten from the Mexican military and so on. So you really can't take chances and hope that those guys floating in the water are neutralized.
That's right. And they are enemy. They are labeled as a foreign terrorist group. And that's what the U.S. is doing. And the Secretary of War gave his orders from the president to strike those people. And it's a lawful order. They are killing Americans, maybe not with weapons, but with fentanyl and other drugs. So for us to take action and get rid of them on international waters is within our right. And it's a lawful order.
I've seen some people trying to criticize this lately from the left have been backed into the corner of saying that they don't think drugs are actually harmful. Like they say, oh, cocaine doesn't kill anybody, and your jaw drops. Like, are you nuts? You know, but that seems to be where they are right now. They're trying to frame a new narrative where it was totally outrageous to use military force to interdict drugs at all. And I don't think most of the American people think that's outrageous. They might want to have a discussion about it, but they don't think it's crazy at all to have the military shut down narcoterrorism.
That's right. And I don't know why the leaders, so-called leaders on the left, are so adamant about against this action. I don't know if their portfolios are big in Narcan, and that's the only reason why they don't want that to be stopped. But other than that, I mean, you would think that they would applaud this president, but their hate for President Trump so it runs so deep that they could care less. It would, I mean, he could, you know, cure the world of cancer, and they would still hate him for it.
I have seen it very darkly suggested that what the Democrats are really trying to do here is paralyze the military. What they're really doing is sending a message out to service members that if you obey President Trump's orders, you're setting yourself up for a fall, because when we're back in power, we're coming after you. And they want to make them all very nervous about obeying the commander-in-chief and just break down military cohesion entirely.
That's right. And again, it goes against the good order of the military. It goes against everything. It's treasonous. It truly is. And if the Republicans are not going to truly go after them, whether, I mean, they could find them, they could, I mean, you know, they always say they're going to investigate and they'll bring up charges or they'll sanction, or God knows what they're going to do, but it's always lip service. And I think a lot of people like myself want to see some action. I want to see some accountability and say, okay, you're doing this, you're harming our military. Let's hold you responsible for your actions. And we'll see what happens.
People forget that any use of kinetic force is a dicey proposition. There's always risk. People could get hurt, could get killed. Our guys are taking chances with their lives when they do this. And even the strikes that we think of as being great operations today, like killing Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, that was done in Pakistan. And that could very easily have led into some kind of a huge conflagration or legal questions. But we got Osama bin Laden. Everybody just applauded and said, glad he's dead.
Absolutely. And we did a great service to the world. And now we're doing a great service to the United States by getting rid of narco traffickers that are smuggling poison into the U.S. and other countries. So, I don't understand why the left is so concerned about smugglers and what they're doing. I mean, they're evil people and we should get rid of them.
And they have connections to state actors, which is where the term narco-terrorism comes from. They're not just criminal gangs smuggling a product. These gangs have connections to governments. In some cases, they are the government for all intents and purposes, as they are in Mexico. They have political influence. They have state actors backing them up. That's what makes this an appropriate thing for military action, an appropriate theater for military response.
Absolutely. And the enemy is in our gates. And this president, this administration is trying to stop it prior to getting here. Again, they should be applauding what he's doing and having the courage to take some action instead of just talking about it and then talking about how bad the drug problem is and how bad the opioid crisis is here in the U.S. We're actually doing something.
And it seems like everything else we've tried didn't work, which is a big problem here. Drugs have become more lethal, more addictive. Fentanyl obviously changed the equation, made them much deadlier. And most other things we've tried to do have not worked, simply because the pipeline in the United States is so hard to interdict. So we got to stop them outside the borders. It's the only thing that makes any sense. Eric Lionheart, president and founder of the First There Foundation, thanks very much for joining us. I'm John Hayward, deputy national security editor for Breitbart News. We'll be right back with more of Allen's All Stars.
Hilton has once again been ranked number one on the world's best workplace list, according to Great Place to Work and Fortune. The hospitality leader has now topped the list twice in 3 years. At Hilton, its team members say the hospitality industry is where they can learn, grow, and achieve their career goals. Victoria, a sales director at a Homewood Suites property, explains.
Hospitality is the warmest industry that you can go into. The care, the nurturing, and the areas of opportunity are large. There are so many different elements in hospitality, and I don't think everyone thinks about the larger picture that they could fit into. Hilton has always been just a welcoming, open-armed, flexible place to work. I'm going to look forward in enjoying more stable work days and the ability to just have that work-life balance that I truly want.
To learn more about what makes Hilton a great place to work, visit stories.hilton.com/worldsbestworkplace.
Everyone wants to give the perfect gift this holiday season, and the choice is easy. Gift cards have been the most requested gift for nearly 20 years, and experts recommend knowing how to gift smart to maximize gift card joy. A 30-second safety check can spot potential problems quickly before you give the card to someone. Look at gift card packaging to make sure colors, logos, and text match others on the shelf. Feel the back for bumps or extra layers that are thicker than other cards. Check the pin covering to make sure it's smooth and fully intact. Examine edges for cuts or tears that can signal a card has been tampered with. If something doesn't look right, choose a different card from the display and give the suspicious card to a customer service or checkout clerk. Gift cards are designed for joy, and taking the few extra seconds to gift smart can make a huge difference in keeping holiday spirits bright. Learn more at giftcardsafety.org. That's giftcardsafety.org.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Allen's All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. ABC News had an astounding headline yesterday. They were doing an article about these Caribbean drug strikes, not the one with the double tap that was the source of so much controversy, but a different one. And their story was about a Colombian that was involved with this thing. He was killed in a drug boat that was attacked by the U.S. military, and his family is trying to sue the United States government. And they have support from Gustavo Petro, the left-wing president of Colombia, who has taken to referring to this guy as a fisherman who was just innocuously floating around when the U.S. military blew him up illegally for no reason. And ABC News The headline they have on the suit being filed is "Family of Colombian Fisherman Killed in U.S. Boat Strike Files Complaint Alleging He Was Murdered." Wow, just a fisherman, huh? Just out there fishing, just, you know, trying to catch a couple of trout. And the U.S. military, Pete Hegseth, comes along, screams, "Kill them all," and the military blows them up. I mean, as a lot of people were responding to this ABC headline when they saw this post, did the cartel pay ABC News for this? Did they get some money from the drug cartel to write the story this way, to push their line? Did Gustavo Petro pay off ABC News in order to get this kind of coverage? Because you can't usually get this kind of tongue bath coverage and your preferred framing adopted into a headline unless either you have some control or influence over the media, such as you purchase with money, or the media is so ideologically aligned with you that they are quite willing to just carry your laundry and write their stories as if your public relations department had written it. And in this case, it would be the public relations department of a drug cartel had written this thing. So this is just amazing framing that they're doing for the media coverage on this. They're acting like it's a foregone conclusion that these are just innocent people that Trump is randomly murdering for no good reason. And a couple of people responding to the ABC story said, this is just like Maryland Man. Remember, he had this illegal alien, he's in drug trafficking and everything else, and the media starts calling him a Maryland Man, as if he was just some regular dude standing around that got deported by Trump for no good reason. This is the same thing. They're playing up the idea that these people are completely innocent and were wantonly murdered by Trump and Hegseth and the rest of his crazy Dr. Strangelove military operation, when that's not the case at all. And, you know, no benefit of the doubt is being given here. But of course, if this was a Democrat administration, they would never frame it this way. They would never act like it was a presumption of innocence for the drug lords. And they probably wouldn't let drug cartels write their headlines to make up the story. As proof of that, as evidence of how much different a little time can make things, do you remember Joe Biden murdering an innocent family in Afghanistan? Yes, yes, this happened. And there's no doubt that Joe Biden was directly involved in it. And it happened in 2021. It was during Biden's absolute disaster of a bug out from Afghanistan. This just, you know, CF, to use the military's polite term for it, where Biden just did everything wrong, pulling the military out of Afghanistan. And he ends up creating this terrible security situation at the airport in Kabul, which they were using for the evacuation, which was dumb. They should have used other airports, but Biden gave them up. And he brought everybody to Kabul to get out. And terrorists attacked while at this airport in all the confusion. And they killed some American service members. And it was a bad thing. I mean, it was very bad for Biden. Very immediate, shocking coverage of this happened. So Joe Biden panicked. I mean, he just lost his mind. Or it wasn't him. You know, he could have been in one of his phases where he's not really coherent. And somebody else made this decision for him. But whoever did it panicked and decided they had to show they were tough guys, and they had to strike back. So they ordered an immediate attack on what they said were carefully vetted terrorist targets that they were going to destroy in order to provide safety for the rest of the bug out and get revenge for the attack, the terrorist attack. And what they ended up doing was blowing up a family of innocent civilians with an airstrike. They weren't ISIS. There's never been a shred of evidence that connected them to terrorism in any way. They were just an innocent family. Seven of the people Biden killed were children. Children. Not fishermen. Not Maryland men. Children. And they were just vaporized because Biden freaked out and he had to do something. So he said, quick, bomb somebody. And they had some kind of faulty intelligence that said this could be a terrorist hideout. And it turned out it was just his family's house. If you don't remember the details, and I wouldn't be surprised because the media buried this as fast as they could, the family died while the guy who runs the family, the father, the patriarch, he was coming back with water. He was picking up a load of water to give water to his family, and they targeted his vehicle as it drove into the house, and then they just unleashed the Hellfire missiles, and that was that for all of them. Nobody cared. Do you remember Mark Kelly saying a word about this? Do you remember any Democrat? Any Democrat, any of the people currently doing sedition routines like vaudeville show, did any of them care? Did any of them criticize this? Did any of them demand resignations from Biden, from his Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, as it was at the time? No. Nobody lost their jobs. Nobody got in trouble. There weren't any hearings. There was no question about it at all. The whole story just faded from the media
in a matter of hours. I reported on it. I had a bunch of articles I wrote about it back when it happened, and I was just astounded that as every new revelation about how sloppy and quick and panicked this action was, how there were so many obvious failures in the chain of command that led up to this strike. And, you know, nobody else cared. The media just made it disappear because it was Joe Biden. He's a Democrat. They weren't going to criticize him for doing this. I thought at the time this attack happened, this was pretty strong evidence that Biden was mentally incapable. And history, of course, would go on to validate my judgment in spades over the ensuing years. But I thought this was 2021 now. This is pretty early in the Biden administration. And I thought this was a pretty good indication that he wasn't all there. Because a commander in chief who was mentally present wouldn't have done something like this. They wouldn't have panicked this badly, and they wouldn't have decided that the only thing they could do would be to order a blind strike on a house that might be a terrorist hideout. And to this day, this thing fascinates me about this story. There has never been a single bit of solid information about why anybody thought this family's house was a terrorist hideout. Isn't that amazing? In this time of seditious Democrats saying that the military should stop obeying Donald Trump's legal orders because they don't like him, and they're suggesting that maybe the military should overthrow Trump now, in this day and age where they're trying to make a big story about a strike on a boatload of narco-terrorists, but back then in 2021, they didn't care that there wasn't any compelling evidence. They never asked why this house was targeted, who provided that intel, and how did it go so badly wrong. They just wiped their hands of all the blood and dirt and walked away from it. They didn't even care. And you could go a little further back than that in terms of irresponsibility in military control. And we could talk about Benghazi. You remember when that happened? I was watching that in real time, by the way. I was awake and doing the news and so forth, working on my writing at the time the Benghazi disaster happened. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I thought, I mean, this is it. At the very least, Hillary Clinton's going to jail for this. And no responsibility, no accountability. Nobody got fired. Nobody got held responsible. We did have investigations. The Republicans did. And what did our friends, the Democrats, the party of sedition, what did the Democrats do back when there were serious investigations of the Benghazi disaster? They said it was all just a Republican paranoid obsession, and they refused to cooperate with any of the investigations into this horrific debacle that cost Americans their lives. I mean, that should have been preventable. We should be talking about military chain of command there. There's a lot that went wrong in the Benghazi disaster. But one of the big problems was that the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary of State at the time, they were setting up all kinds of very dicey operations surrounding this consulate in Benghazi. And they really did not account for the possibility that it might be targeted by the enemy in a counterattack. They didn't even really believe they had enemies when they were capable of it. When they were doing all this. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that if you Democrats, you want to talk about bringing somebody up on charges and investigating, how about that? But nope. When the Republicans wanted to investigate that, they were all denounced as a bunch of paranoid, partisan, lunatic conspiracy theorists. There were people on the left to this day, I think, who actually were using Benghazi as like a joke meme. Like if you even say the word, you're some kind of mindless crackpot obsessive. Who's busy over little things. Do you remember, speaking of irresponsibility, what the Obama administration did after Benghazi got to be a little bit of a problem for them? And they realized, we're kind of in trouble over this attack, and it is starting to stick. And it's an election. Remember, there's elections. So what did they do? Well, they went out and found some chump who made a video that they decided was insulting to Islam, and they threw the guy in jail. And they claimed that his video had somehow prompted the Benghazi attack, as if that was the only reason it happened, because a bunch of guys in Libya saw this dude's video on YouTube and said, that tears it, we're going to go blow up the American consulate. That was their political defense. And I don't see anybody in the Seditious Six having a problem with any of that, did you? None of them criticized any of this. None of them said there was a problem with the chain of command or the commander-in-chief's lawful authority. They're fine with it. As long as it's their party, they don't give a damn what happens or the military or anything else. But when it's a Republican, they'll look for anything they can to try to manufacture a story. And that's what we're in the throes of right now. And I really do think in the end, this story won't really end until we know whether these military strikes on cartel boats are having a positive effect on the drug problem. And that's when the American voter is likely to render their final judgment. But in the meantime, not looking good for the Democrats as of today. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with more of Allen's All-Stars.
Earlier this year, a photograph of a vibrant blue Volkswagen bus sitting relatively unscathed within a decimated Malibu neighborhood became a symbol of hope during the Palisades fire. The bus, a 1977 Type 2 named Azul by its owner Megan Weinraub, attracted the attention of Volkswagen, who offered to restore the vehicle to its pre-fire form. Now, at the Los Angeles Auto Show, Azul makes its first public appearance. Volkswagen's SVP of brand marketing, Rachel Zaluzik.
Azul caught the attention of people around the world, reflecting the resiliency of the people of California. We're proud to have Azul as part of the Volkswagen family.
Megan Weinraub.
When the photo went viral, I felt like the world experienced a piece of my heart. I was touched. Volkswagen reached out to help. And now Azul feels like a symbol of hope more than ever before.
Volkswagen also has pledged donations to the California Fire Foundation to support first responders and their families around the state. For more, visit VW.com.
Hi, this is registered dietitian Mia Sid. I have tips to stay healthy through the holiday season and into the winter months. Now, I love the idea of a wellness getaway, and Victoria, British Columbia is the perfect place to refresh and revive. You can set your intention for the new year this January in Victoria, British Columbia at TourismVictoria.com. Now, I'm a huge fan of superfoods, and Chilean salmon is a nutrient powerhouse. It's high in protein, omega-3 fats, and vitamin D, and a source of other nutrients that can support your immune health. Now, sorghum is another great food to incorporate. It's versatile, naturally gluten-free, and a natural source of antioxidants and a good source of protein. And finally, supercharge your wellness regimen with plant-based supplements. Rainbow Light's new liquid herbal tinctures feature sustainably harvested plant-based formulas crafted with care. Find them at the Vitamin Shop and VitaminShop.com. For more, visit NutritionByMia.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
Welcome back to Allen's All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. The lawsuit against President Trump for election interference in Fulton County, Georgia, has been dismissed. And that means that President Trump and the other defendants have racked up millions of dollars defending themselves against a suit that never should have been filed in the first place. And those costs may now be passed on to Georgia taxpayers. Here with us to talk about it is John Deaton, Marine veteran, attorney, former federal prosecutor, and Republican candidate for Senate in Massachusetts against Democrat Senator Ed Markey. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure.
I mean, this is the way of it when lawfare is practiced, and it's one of the reasons why we really need to do something about lawfare. You have these officials that filed the suit. The whole thing falls apart. Now the defendants have been suffering millions of dollars in financial damages, which means they were punished without ever being convicted of anything. And with the dismissal of the suit, all those costs may now be dumped onto taxpayers who certainly didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, it is a real dilemma. It's why that when lawfare is engaged in, we have to do something about it. We have to hold people accountable, because if they're never held accountable, you know, we know the people in Washington, they don't care about taxpayers. It's not their money, so they don't care. But if there's consequences for engaging in lawfare, then maybe that'll be the deterrent moving forward. I guess the only approach. Go ahead.
That's exactly the problem. There's no consequences for the people who actually do it. Everybody else pays the bill, but the people who launch these phony lawsuits and try to use the legal system as a weapon, they never seem to be the ones writing a check when it all falls apart. They just skip off into their next political project.
And then we, you know, maybe start thinking about filing cases of malicious prosecution and things of that nature, so that it causes these people in Washington to pause before, and maybe even, you know, federal prosecutors to pause before filing, you know, cases like that shouldn't be brought.
There's an old saying that the process is the punishment if you find yourself on the wrong side of a process like this. And if you're up against the government, it has all this taxpayer money it can throw into whatever it wants to do, whatever level of government we're talking about. But as an individual citizen, how are you going to cough up millions of dollars to defend yourself? President Trump was able to, but not everybody can do that.
No, you can't. And there's been many cases and examples of people going into bankruptcy because, you know, to get a white collar type of legal defense, it's not uncommon for your bills to be $3 million a month, especially if you're in trial. And like you said, the government has unlimited resources. When the other side has unlimited resources, what they do is prosecutors will bury you in litigation, in discovery, driving those costs up even further. It really is a problem that needs to be addressed.
Part of the problem I see highlighted by this case is that our election system is so absurdly rickety, so third world, that it's not hard to come up with charges and countercharges of election interference. We should solve all these problems, quite apart from the lawfare issue, by having an election system that's rock solid, that isn't vulnerable to so much hanky-panky, so nobody's getting charged with election interference anymore.
Listen, if we don't have faith in our electoral process, then that's the foundation of our system. And so I agree with you. We've got to get back to having integrity in our electoral process. And I think obviously that starts with, you know, paper ballots, voter IDs and things of that nature.
Now, you're running for the Senate in what could be a somewhat tough environment for Republicans. And right now, the political wise men are all trying to read the tea leaves. And the most recent tea leaf was the result in Tennessee, which was about as confusing a signal as you could get, because the Republican ended up winning by, you know, pretty much the mathematically predictable margin of error, but against a comically hideous Democrat candidate that shouldn't have been within 20 points of him. So what do you take from that as a signal for the ground ahead? Is the lesson here that these races are winnable with a good candidate and a tightly run campaign, no matter how much the Democrats throw into it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's matchup. I'm going against Ed Markey. He's only been in Washington since 1976. So 50 years in Washington and Massachusetts, those far left policies like the Green New Deal, they're literally causing Massachusetts to be dead last in almost every category, private sector job growth, housing affordability. And so I think it comes down to matchups. Incumbents that have been in Washington for decades, I think they're vulnerable. And Marky is, and we have polling that shows I can win this race, even though it is an uphill battle for me.
Time and again, people who don't live in states or in districts like that, they look at it and they say, how can anybody keep voting for the party that inflicted all of this upon themselves? Why aren't they willing to try somebody new that has new ideas?
Well, this is going to be the exact, your issue that you just brought up is going to be the exact study that we have here in Massachusetts, because it really can't get any worse in Massachusetts than it is, trust me. And so with someone like Ed Markey, who's been there for 50 years, we're going to see, I believe they've went so far left here that they've offended center left people. And so we're going to see if that plays out.
And conventional political wisdom tells us midterms are just always tough on the party in power, no matter who and what is involved. It's just always an uphill slog. And people look at that and say, why should that be the case? Why should it be so hard for the party in power to do well in a midterm if they can present a compelling argument to the voters? Is it just fate that you just can't do that well when you're the in party during the midterms?
Well, I just think, you know, people are fed up with members of Congress, oftentimes on both sides, not doing their jobs. And they take it out on the incumbent that's in power. Here, that's why it's going to be very interesting with Markey. He's been an incumbent for, you know, 50 years. And I think that's going to be an advantage for me. But I it is true. I mean, but we don't know what the economy is going to look like, you know, come August or September. So there's a lot of unknown, you know, issues to deal with.
What would you advise the Republican leadership in the Congress to do right now to change that playing field? What could they do to get people excited about voting for them?
Well, one thing, you know, certainly President Trump has suggested the filibuster and going to, you know, ending that. The Democrats have identified that they're going to do it. They're talking about stacking the Supreme Court with 13 justices. They can only do that by ending the filibuster. So, I mean, that's one thing. And I think dealing with the affordability issue is where we need to address our focus.
Do you think the Republican caucus in Congress has been working well with the administration so far, or do you see room for improvement in that relationship?
Well, I think that, you know, there's been cracks in the foundation, but I think that, you know, the Republicans can take a page from the Democrats where they stick together no matter what sometimes. And I think Republicans need to do the same.
I think that's good advice because, you know, you don't want blind loyalty exactly. That's not what impresses voters, but unity of purpose and belief in your principles does. And if everybody's on the same page, why shouldn't they all be unified? John Deaton, Marine veteran, attorney, former federal prosecutor, and Republican candidate for Senate in Massachusetts. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, your host today on Allen All-Stars. Thanks for joining us on this hour.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.